Hello, and welcome back to 100% Real with Ruby. Today, we're diving deep into everything about women, and I have finally got the most amazing Brandon DeCruz on my podcast. I am so honored to finally have him on here to talk all things women's physiology and how we are not small men. And we were talking just before I clicked record that, like, there is so much out there targeted towards male dieting, the way that males should do things. And even the best of the best in the coaching realm, they still put their females through the same thing as men when it comes to dieting, when it comes to coming out of dieting, when it comes to all of that stuff. Because if it's not about males, it's about, hey, let's bulk and cut for stage. Let's do this bodybuilding stuff. And Brandon has dealt with a lot of hormonal dysfunction in his coaching years. So I'm going to let you introduce yourself to the podcast by telling the females on my audience about what it is that you usually come across the most when it comes to women. And then we can dive deep into why women are really not just small men.
Absolutely. So Ruby, first and foremost, I want to thank you for having me on and working with my schedule. I know it's been hectic. We've been trying to make this happen, guys, for months. So I am excited to be here. But just going to give you guys a little bit of background about myself. This is now my 14th year working in the industry. I've done everything from sports nutrition. So I've formulated and done research and development behind many supplement company or supplements on the market today, as well as I've been coaching for the past 9 years. So it's been a while that I've been in this industry in some capacity professionally. And also it's one of my life's passions. So I've competed over 15 times. I've done over 100 photo shoots. I've done content for bodybuilding.com and men's fitness and muscular development. So I've been featured in a lot of different magazines. I've done a lot of write-ups and podcasts. And I'm based out in the States. I'm based out of New York. And so in my area, you know, really what is prominent, I'm about an hour away from Bev Francis Powerhouse. So for any of your American listeners or people that are familiar, it's called the East Coast Mecca. So it's one of the most famous gyms in the world, but also the most famous gym in the United States. So I encounter a lot of women that have had high level coaches. I mean, these are people with 10, 20, 30 years of experience. However, because if we go back 20 or 30 years in this industry, women were underrepresented. So let's look at it from like a theoretical perspective. Even in research, we didn't see women being studied in resistance training studies until the 80s. We didn't see a female Miss Olympia until 1981. So we've had decades upon decades in which bodybuilding or fitness was very prominent in males, yet we didn't have the same thing in females. So I feel that a lot of people, a lot of males especially, are behind the times. So within my years of coaching, I was just telling Ruby, when I first got into coaching, you know, obviously I had a predominantly male roster, but as I had more and more females come to me, I'm kind of known for metabolic adaptations. If you guys ever look up my name, I'm linked with, you know, dozens of podcasts on the topic, but it's really because I had to learn the ins and outs of female physiology. And honestly, you know, like Ruby was alluding to, we have to realize in this industry that women are not just little men and shouldn't be treated as such. It's so important to get this, you know, and luckily within the last couple of years, most have viewed women as such, but things have luckily started to change, especially in the last few years within the fat loss research scene. So we see guys like Bill Campbell doing a lot of research and including women. And I'm really happy to see that, because if we go back to when I first started coaching in 2013, there was very limited evidence and data that I could look up. I mean, I remember one of the first females I coached was a woman I was in a relationship with, and I knew nothing about female physiology. You know, I had to learn the menstrual cycle 101 from like really base level books and things that nowadays most people wouldn't go to that extent to learn about a female's endocrinology and learning the differences with a female's physiology as compared to a male's. However, you know, luckily things are starting to shape up, and unfortunately people are still not taking advantage of it. So by that, I mean, in weight loss studies today, we actually see a much higher proportion of studies being done on females than males. And in some cases, I had a statistic I was looking at earlier today, up to 75% of the weight loss research is being done on or including female subjects. So we're getting a lot of more data. However, a lot of people are missing the boat by not looking into this stuff. They've worked predominantly with males, so they apply these same approaches that they use with males on females. And here's the thing, this is a necessity, as females encounter issues with dieting that many males do not. So if we were just to compare the two, you'd see a majority of scenarios, you know, females lose fat with a greater difficulty. They gain fat easier. They have a monthly cycle to manage, which all make dieting not only harder, but more complicated, both physically and mentally. However, the issue has been that many of the common dieting practices within this fitness industry have come from men. So often that we still see approaches that are suboptimal for a woman being applied to them, as though there aren't major differences between a male's and a female's physiology. So it's really these differences in physiology that we need to consider when working with female clients as compared to our male clients, because we have to realize that everyone's an N of one. You're an individual, but there are broad-based, you know, physiological differences that we need to pay attention to, and a lot of people overlook.
So we did touch on a little bit with the whole estrogen thing just before you popped on, and I feel like that always gets overlooked in that we are predominantly estrogen and estrogen dominant versus the males who are testosterone dominant. Yet that's not factored into the way that we should be dieting and the way that we are more influenced to not only gain fat easier, but the distribution is different. So maybe touching on why we aren't small men due to these physiological differences is the best way to weave into this conversation.
Absolutely. So let's look at this from a broad perspective. If we look at males, and it's, guys, I've worked with hundreds of males at this point, I'll tell you, males' physiology stays the same week to week, month to month, and year to year, unless you get into, you know, the stages in which they're older and they're going hypogonadal. But if we were to compare that, you know, a 30-year-old male client compared to a 30-year-old female client, we're going to see that a female's physiology is completely different from the follicular phase to the luteal phase, which impacts both their response to training and especially to nutrition. So just from a, you know, a higher level perspective, let's look at the different phases. So during the follicular phase, which is the first 2 weeks of the female's cycle after menstruation, estrogen is the dominant hormone, like Ruby touched on, and levels are much higher than that of progesterone. But what does estrogen do within this? This results in higher insulin sensitivity and enhanced ability to utilize carbohydrates. So right there, we see differences in metabolic flexibility. Whereas a male, they're going to be able to oxidize nutrients the same all month long. However, if we're to juxtapose or to compare that to the second half of the cycle, which is the luteal phase, we'll see that progesterone levels increase and are the dominant hormone over estrogen. So this results in actually higher levels of insulin resistance, and it diminishes a female's ability to utilize carbs for energy. And so actually, you know, when we were off air, Ruby and I were talking about this, and I really want to, before I go into more of the differences between a male and a female's physiology, I want to touch on the topic of estrogen, because I think this is heavily misunderstood, especially about from male coaches. And here's the thing, they misunderstand it, both the role that estrogen plays in females, but also in males. So we see it's really predominant to look at estrogen as this demonized, you know, wrongly demonized hormone. But in reality, it's got a ton of benefits, which many male coaches, and I'm not, you know, I don't want to just isolate this to male coaches, but I will say that I have encountered so many more male coaches that demonize estrogen, that utilize aromatase inhibitors, that try to crush estrogen, especially in the competitive scene, not realizing the many benefits and effects that estrogen has. So let's look at it from a dieting perspective. You know, estrogen improves leptin sensitivity in the brain. So we know that leptin is the main, essentially master regulator, and it senses and sends a signal to the hypothalamus of your energy availability status. So when you have higher leptin sensitivity in the brain, this helps with regulating your appetite and managing hunger. So another thing, it helps improve insulin sensitivity and glucose metabolism. Estrogen also improves muscular remodeling from training, and it also helps to decrease muscle damage, which is why women experience less soreness and a lower chance of DOMS. And with that, it also has health effects. So it's cardioprotective, it's renal protective, it helps decrease inflammation, and it's critical for cognitive function. So if we just think about that, ladies, like I was just referring to in the follicular phase, estrogen is your dominant hormone. So we need to take advantage of that because it has all these benefits. However, when it becomes, you know, overwhelmed by progesterone, which essentially has the, you know, almost directly opposing effects as estrogen does, we see some of these benefits diminish. We see more soreness. We see increased markers or muscle damage. We see less insulin sensitivity. We see, you know, this is anecdotal. Most women that I've worked with in the late luteal phase, they'll have higher propensity and higher likelihood of cravings. That's because your leptin sensitivity has dropped. So we see these things. So it's really important to understand these things, because it's not just about estrogen for females. That's especially important because that is, like Ruby pointed out, it's their main hormone. However, it's beneficial for males too. So I can't tell you how many times that I've had a male come to me that's had his estrogen levels suppressed, whether it's endogenously or exogenously. So through natural supplementation or through aromatase inhibitors. And they're dealing with lack of libido. They're dealing with joint issues. Their joints are dry. They're dealing with an inability to drop body fat because estrogen is involved in fat metabolism as well. You know, they have higher blood glucose and less insulin sensitivity. So we see all these effects. And because estrogen has been demonized, especially in America, people don't relate it back to the benefits and the detriments that suppressing estrogen can have. So besides that, you know, we've touched on the hormonal aspect of things. When it comes down to the specific topic of fat loss between sexes, many of the differences between males and females come down to energy expenditure. Because let's think about it, you know, theoretically or just logistically. On average, females have about 10% more body fat due to having higher levels of essential fat, and then also about 10% less muscle mass than males. So due to females being smaller and having less lean body mass, just by default, they have a lower resting metabolic rate. So this results in females needing to not only eat less calories, but they also burn less calories during exercise minute per minute when compared to a male. So a lot of times women don't realize that. So when we're trying to utilize programs or approaches to fat loss with females that are the same that we use with males, we have to realize 45 minutes of cardio for a male is going to burn dramatically more calories than with a female. And the same thing with creating an energy deficit. Let's look at this from this perspective. There's this golden rule of 3,500 calories to lose a pound of body fat, or, you know, mixed tissue essentially. And so people will go for a 500 calorie deficit per week. But if I have a female come to me, and many a times this is the situation, if she comes to me on 1,500 calories, to get her in a 500 calorie deficit to hit that goal, that's a 33% deficit. However, if I have a guy come to me and his maintenance calories are 3,000, and I put him on a 500 calorie deficit, that's a 16% deficit. They're in the same absolute deficit in terms of calories being subtracted per week, but they're in a dramatically different relative deficit. And the effects that a woman is going to feel from that being at 1,000 calories to try to get that 1 pound per week that our industry so often promotes and encourages people to get is going to have detrimental impacts on her hormones, on her her ability to train, how she feels, so many things. It's going to have so many downstream effects. So we really have to realize that we're looking at physiological differences, but we're also looking just from size differences. However, you know, the issue is that, you know, females' bodies also tend to fight back harder and faster when it comes to losing fat. So it's not only that they also burn less calories and are unable to eat as many calories, but they essentially, like what I try to, you know, describe to my clients is, ladies, your body has evolved to survive, not to be extremely lean. So they tend to adapt harder to fat loss dieting. Yet at the same time, it's usually, you know, the issue is that often women are the ones who take the most extreme approaches to dieting, which accelerates and exacerbates these adaptations all the more. So really what I try to get across to females when I start working with them, and we're going to go into, you know, some of my approaches and why fat loss isn't my first goal with a female. It's rebuilding metabolic capacity and rebuilding everything and prioritizing different things prior to starting a fat loss phase, but it's because their physiology is different. And if we don't put the high priority principles first and really optimize their physiology and just take the blanketed male approach, they're not going to get the results that they want, nor are they going to be able to sustain them.
It's sad that we see that a lot happening in the industry, and especially with the before and afters and seeing people always, like, there are so many photos and stories of people competing for stage and stuff, and then you have your general Mary Sue who just wants to lose fat, and then she puts herself through this dieting cycle, and then she sees a coach that says, okay, let's just cut your 500 calories, get this deficit, and then before you know it, you're in this cycle of just cutting calories. And maybe before you weave into your approach, maybe you can talk about the detrimental effects on progesterone and therefore on estrogen in that chronic dieting state, because stress not only then in the chronic term dampens the progesterone, but then that leads to estrogen dominance. But it doesn't mean that estrogen is high. It just means that you killed off your progesterone, and then this is just going to create a whole hormonal dysfunctional cascade.
Well, we see, I mean, a downstream effects of, you know, in terms of hormonal adaptations, it's not just estrogen, progesterone, but progesterone can sometimes go down to 10% of what it normally is when a woman has pushed herself hard in dieting. And then at the same time, estrogen can go down to 30% of their normal levels. So there's detrimental effects that happen with women hormonally. And that is generally seen when they become amenorrheic. So if a woman has a cessation of her menstrual cycle, or, you know, generally, if you look at the research on amenorrhea, it's the loss of the menstrual cycle in which you don't have more than 3 per year. So when we look at the effects of that, we have to realize that they're very similar to that of metabolic adaptation. So we see, you know, a loss of bone mineral density. We see drop in thyroid production, especially T3, which is your metabolic active T3. We see a suppression of your metabolic rate. We see lower leptin levels. We see, like you were alluding to, drops and decreases in estrogen and progesterone. We see, you know, all these downstream effects, and they have so many long-term effects on women, especially if they stay in that chronically dieted state. And that's the biggest thing. When I have women come to me, they haven't had a cycle, and they're normally cycling. They're not on, you know, hormonal birth control. That's already a sign that you've put your body under too much stress. If you're extremely lean, yes, a lot of, you know, a good percentage of women will get there due to a lack of energy availability. But if you're walking around having functional hypothalamic amenorrhea, which is the type of amenorrhea that we most commonly see in fitness, this is an issue. You know what I mean? This is an indication that you've been, you know, aggressively dieting for too long or under eating, that you have low energy availability, that you have high levels of psychological stress. No, we see so many things that don't only impact your body composition, but we see things like immune system function being impaired. We see even cardiovascular detriments. So we have to realize that there are long lasting effects that could happen if you stay in this chronically dieted down state, which is why when so many women come to me, I don't put them in a fat loss phase, because we have to realize, and this goes to men as well, but it's especially prominent with women, that there are so many physiological and psychological roadblocks and obstacles that many will encounter during a fat loss phase, which often creates stalls or will cause them to get discouraged and quit, which is why I don't believe in going right into a fat loss phase with a person, especially if they're a female and they're not in a good spot, both from a physical and mental health perspective. As Ruby, you know what I say, I truly believe a healthy body is a responsive body, especially when it comes to fat loss. So we have to put, you know, you can't put the cart before the horse. We have to prioritize our body and make sure we're looking long-term. It's not about what you can accomplish in 8 to 12 weeks in terms of fat loss. It's what can I accomplish in these next 12 months and what can I maintain thereafter?
That, like, in this day and age, there is probably not really one woman that hasn't tried multiple diets before. So this is a common thing that everybody listening to this podcast needs to listen. And it's hard to hear, okay, so imagine what you can actually accomplish in a year, in 2 years. Oh, but what about this person who did this on the 12-week challenge? Like, the people coming to us are already in this state. So maybe we can talk about exactly why it is and what you do in this primer phase, which we both call it, to be able to prime the body for a more successful fat loss phase so that it's not so push and shove, and exactly how this hormonal dysfunction can make dieting not only harder, but can make you smaller but looking worse before you're fatter in the long run.
Absolutely. So like you alluded to, when I have females come to me and they're not in a great place, and I do this with my male clients as well, but it's much more likely, and I see an increased likelihood of this happening when I have females come to me that have a long chronic dieting history, that don't have a good relationship with food. So what I do is I go into what I call a primer phase. And, you know, this is something I've discussed on other podcasts, but I have different types of primer phases. It's with the intention of, you know, it's essentially the diet before the diet, where my aim is to improve, optimize, and set up a client's physiology and psychology so that they respond better and can lose fat more effectively once we do enter an energy deficit. But I take a different approach with different clients. So for some males, if I have someone come to me and they have metabolic syndrome or insulin resistance, my approach with them and their primer phase is going to be completely different than it is with a female that comes to me and that's hormonally downregulated. However, the intention, the reason I use these phases is because, simply put, many individuals aren't in the right state, both physically and mentally, to start a fat loss phase. And what we end up seeing is that they end up rushing into it But this often leads to them either falling off the diet and not being able to comply. So we see that binge restrict cycle that's so common in today's society, or we see them complete, you know, a rushed, yo-yo diet, and then they're gaining back all the weight they've lost right after finishing the diet. So like you're saying, they end up fatter than they started out with. And that's a concept called body fat overshooting. I've done, you know, hour-long podcasts on this concept. But essentially, ladies, we have to realize is if you crash diet and you lose lean body mass in the process, your body goes into a state of hyperphagia, which means enhanced appetite to regain not only the lost lean body mass that you've lost, but it's also going to regain fat mass. And the reason for that is that we accrue fat much quicker than we do muscle. I mean, anyone that has been in a building phase will tell you, muscle building is a long and patient process. It takes time. However, all of us know that we've been able to, whether it be during a holiday or we went on a vacation or we just ate off plan, we're able to gain fat so much quicker. But that's especially prominent, and that's especially likely or highly likely when someone finishes an aggressive fat loss phase. So what I try to do with the primer phase is it helps me to make sure a client is in the right place physiologically and psychologically. We're really going to hone in on the psychology as well, because I want to increase their likelihood of succeeding both in the fat loss phase itself and then in the maintenance of the results after. So I always tell, you know, when I talk to other coaches and stuff, or I speak with clients, I always say, I don't want to just be proud of your before and after. I want to be able to post your after. And I often post more of my reverse dieting transformations or my post-diet phases with clients than I do my own before and afters, because anyone can get you lean and starve you for 8 to 12 weeks and get you shredded. But can they make sure that you're in a state where you don't regain all of that and lose all the positive habits and behaviors that you modified during the diet itself? Can they make sure that your psychology isn't one where you're messed up and really food focused and create a binge restrict relationship around food? So really, when I'm looking at this primer phase, I want everyone out there to realize why this is necessary or why I find it extremely beneficial, especially with my female clients. And this is because, and I'm sure that this is going to sound pretty familiar, especially to Ruby, because we've had these conversations before, but many females tend to, A, have a long history of chronic dieting. They've gotten themselves into situations with crash diets in the past where they've been on extremely low calories, yet they didn't get as lean as they wanted. Or they did, but they couldn't sustain it, which led to bad experiences with rebounding and regaining fat after their previous dieting phases. They're dealing with hormonal issues, whether it's thyroid or it's menstruation issues. They're dealing with metabolic issues caused by either undereating or overeating. And I want to hit on this because this covers the spectrum from, you know, experiencing a suppressed metabolic rate and multiple nutrient deficiencies to having insulin resistance and issues with blood sugar management. So I see both sides of the spectrum. I see women that were extremely lean and they used to do competitions, but they've blown up 20, 30, 40 pounds post-show. And now they're dealing with the opposite end of the spectrum. I see a lot of women, and I speak on this often, that have a poor relationship with the scale and their weight, as well as their body image. And then, not that I find this just to apply to females, but I'll be honest with you. I've found countless females come to me over the years that had food-related issues, ranging from disordered eating behaviors, binge eating episodes, and just an overall poor relationship with food. So these are all things that if we don't address these issues initially before going into a deficit, the chances of them getting worse is amplified, which is why I'd rather focus on improving upon these roadblocks so that they don't limit a client's ability to make progress in the future as they have so many times in the past. So really what I always tell my clients when they come to me and they say, well, I want to lose fat. Like, that's my goal. My goal is not to eat up or feed up. My goal is not to recover my metabolism. What I tell them is, is what you're doing working currently? And it's always a no. So what do you have to lose of me, you know, improving your metabolic health, improving your internal health, improving your relationship with food, improving your psychology and your mindset? You have nothing but things to gain. So really that's, you know, when I get that across to females and they've done it and they went through the process, I'm able to show countless, you know, women that I built up their food intake where they were scared to eat carbs before and now they're eating 300 grams per day, or they were doing boot camp 7 days a week and over-exercising and under-eating. And now I had them training 3 to 4 days with a properly structured resistance training program and putting on muscle. And we're talking lean body mass. So they're getting that, you know, quote unquote tone look that they want. They realize they buy into the program.
Something you hear a lot when you do have that approach with is what you're doing working. Let's actually heal your metabolism first and get your body in the right places. Their kickback is, but I'm nowhere near where I need to be, or I'm not even small enough, or I'm already fat or overweight. I don't want to put on more weight. And that's usually the biggest kickback yet. They find it so hard to get out of the short term to realize this isn't actually going to extend the process. It's going to speed it up, because not only are we going to get through a fat loss phase much more smoother, but you're going to have less kickback. And it's so true. You cannot sustain anything if your mindset around the scales, your relationship with food is poor, and the way that you view progress is so skewed up. And we see that all the time. And this is one of the biggest benefits of a primer phase. Like, a primer phase isn't just about getting your body in the right place, because the body won't go where the mind doesn't go. And
100%.
You can bring in all the impacts of stress on this, but when your body's in a stressed out state, even around food, and you're stressed out about the food, you're not going to metabolize that food the way that you should. Maybe you can touch more on that as well, because people do not understand that how you see that food and how you consume that food, both from the whole brain satiety cascade, your perceptions of food determines the outcome of that meal, pretty much like that whole milkshake study. But if you're stressed out, your digestive system isn't going to do what it needs to do. So maybe you can touch on that a little bit more, into why females need to do this primer phase if they really want to lose the fat and keep it off.
Absolutely. So there are so many purposes and benefits of a primer phase. And I want to hit on this. I want everyone to realize that we cannot separate a woman or a male's physiology from their psychology. They are one in the same. So I'm not saying that coaches should step out of their specialty or should go and cross a line, but I will tell you that one of the number one things I do from a coaching perspective is stress management and enhancing a client's psychology and helping them with those, especially those roadblocks with food and nutrition and exercise and their view and their mindset around it. And, you know, my purpose when I start like a primer phase is to target specific goals with my clients to improve them both physically and mentally. And I want people to realize that the mentality is just as important as the physicality. So often when people come to you with a goal, they're only concerned about the visual. They're only concerned about the external. And that's why I always say a healthy body is a responsive body, because it's not just about the external body. It's about the internal body. It's about your organs. It's about your mindset. It's about your psychology and your views and perspectives on things. And that's why I break these up into two categories in terms of what I'm aiming for with clients. I'm looking at making physiological improvements, and then I'm also looking at making psychological improvements, because they go hand in hand. So if we look at, let's go through, we've been speaking about physiology a lot. So let's go through physiology first, and then we can go through psychology. You guys are going to see how these kind of like, they really match and vibe with one another, because one without the other, if you only prioritize the physiology, that's where a lot of you females are going wrong. That's why you've done dieting phases, but you haven't gotten a good mindset. You haven't improved your habits. You haven't modified your behaviors or your views around food. So that's why you have such a high recidivism rate, or that you constantly rebound, or that you go through those binge restrict cycles. So we have to realize that both need to be prioritized. And I think that's something that not only dieters in general, but a lot of coaches overlook. It's like, let me just assign you macros. And I always say that coaching is about more than just the X's and O's of nutrition in terms of macros and calories, and training in terms of sets and reps. It's about auto-regulation. It's about biofeedback. It's about connecting with the individual and viewing them as an end of one, and understanding both their physiology and their psychology and the things that are going to move the needle in the direction they need to go. It's not just about a prescription. Hey, these are the macros that you're going to hit. Make sure you hit them. No, you have to, you not only have to give them instruction, but show them the path. You can't just bring a horse to water and expect them to drink. You have to show them the process and how it, you know, how they integrate in their lifestyle and how it becomes a sustainable, you know, part of what they do day to day. So the first thing I look to do is, and this is really from a top-down priority perspective. And with the majority of women that come to me, the number one thing I see is that they've been under eating and they have poor metabolic health. So what I try to do is I'm trying to improve their metabolic health by getting them into a high energy flux state where they're eating as much as possible while maintaining their body weight. So that when we do go into a fat loss phase and I do put them in a deficit, we start at the highest calorie intake possible that they can be on without gaining body fat. So one of the main mistakes that I see women make is that they've been under eating, or they've been going through these chronic, yo-yo dieting cycles. They diet Monday through Friday, and then they binge on the weekend. So their calories, they're in a surplus, but they feel physiologically and psychologically. Mentally, they feel restricted because Monday through Friday, they're under eating, they're starving. And what I see here is that they have a suppressed metabolic rate. So because of their actions Monday through Friday, they're suffering from all the effects of metabolic adaptation, the suppressed metabolic rate, the lowered thyroid levels. They're having hormonal imbalances. They potentially have lost their period. They have, you know, lowered energy expenditure. They have lowered meat, so they're not moving around as much. So the goal here is to literally get their body in a place where it's consistently well-fueled, not just Monday through Friday, not just a few days a week. It's consistently well-fueled and gets used to processing and partitioning nutrients well, which puts the client in the best place to succeed in the future phases that we have coming up. From there, you know, this increase in calorie intake, you know, I always try to explain because a lot of women fear increasing food. We know that. You know, a lot of clients in general, they have, you know, a bad relationship, not only from a caloric perspective, but also with food in general. So I always try to explain to clients that this increase in food coupled with properly periodized resistance training programming will allow them to get many benefits. So usually in this primer phase, I'm seeing my female clients gaining lean muscle mass. So with that, we see an increase in their metabolic rate. So this increase comes from higher food intake. So we see a higher thermic effect of feeding and from the muscle they've put on. So now they're being, they have more metabolic resiliency. I want them to be able to go get a free meal and not have weight come on automatically. I want to build up their metabolic capacity to the point where they can actually enjoy themselves on occasion, but it's because we've given their body a signal that they are not in the suppressed state. I've given them their body a signal that they are consistently well-fueled and their body can utilize these calories and don't just have to, you know, be a miser and hold on to them and hold on to that body fat. It's also going to help them fuel more effective training. I can't tell you how many women have come to me that they're not following, you know, a great resistance training program first and foremost. So they're not changing their body composition, but also they're feeling exhausted in and out of the gym. So they have lower NEAT levels from having, you know, they're not getting as good of training output because they're not well fueled. But when I'm able to put more energy into the system, they have higher energy levels, which results in them being more active throughout the day, which raises their NEAT levels. You know, I love when I get a client that has kids. I work with a lot of mothers, and they'll message me that one of their highlights, I like to do a positive thing that has happened this week with all my clients. And a lot of times with my female clients that are mothers, especially, they'll tell me I was able to chase my kid around the park today, or I was able to go hike with my high school daughter and keep up with her. Or, you know, I was able to take my kid with me or my partner with me to a Peloton class. These are things that they weren't able to do. They were living, you know, a suboptimal lifestyle because of their dieting, you know, practices in the past. So that's where I really try to get them in the mindset. Don't be scared of increased food. There's so many benefits that are going to not only help you physically, but mentally, and also other aspects of your life. It's not just about the 1 hour in the day of the day that you spend in the gym. It's about the other 23 hours. I'm also looking to improve food quality and nutrient density. You know, I hit on this a little bit earlier, but I find so many clients who come to me with micronutrient deficiencies, which are often the underlying root causes as to why they lack energy, they feel like shit, and they're having hormonal issues, among other problems. So what I look to do is manage and improve upon this during this phase by increasing food variety and micronutrient availability. I try to reintroduce food sources, especially, you know, there's a lot of dogma in this industry around, you know, excluding fructose or dairy or all these things. It's like such, you know, dichotomized topics, artificial sweeteners and all these different things. And it's like, I'm trying to increase your food, you know, not only your energy availability, but also your micronutrient density. So you feel better. You have all the necessary cofactors, you know, you're able to power metabolic processes. Another thing is improved digestion. I find so many females that have constipation issues because they've been under eating and under fueling. So what I try to do is get across to them that we aren't what we eat, but rather what we can digest, absorb, and assimilate, which is often impaired by, you know, is often limited by impaired digestion. So this is where improving digestion, GI health can increase their nutrient absorption and availability. So they get more of those beneficial vitamins, minerals, polyphenols, and cofactors found within the food sources they're consuming. So they're not only eating better quality foods and feeling better as a result, but they're also absorbing them and feeling better digestively, which all, you know, one of the biggest feedbacks I get from women that they didn't realize they could eat so much food and feel great. Because in the past, when they've had low quality food and they've overeaten, they've binge eaten on the weekends, or they've went into a building phase, it's been with these low quality nutrients. So they get bloating, they get, you know, bowel issues, and then it turns them off because they don't want to go through that experience. So it compounds the issue or their mindset around it. Also during this phase, I look to increase aerobic capacity. And the reason for this is I'm trying to improve their ability to oxidize, utilize and partition nutrients, especially carbohydrates. And I'll tell you, there's so many women that come to me that fear carbs. And when I get them cranking up carbs, it's like they found a new love. When they realize, hey, I can take in 200-400 grams of carbs and not gain body fat, it's like they've unlocked like a new treasure. They're training harder. They're feeling better. They're enjoying more, more foods. And also by improving their aerobic capacity, I'm also seeing a tangible increase in health markers, like their resting heart rate, their blood pressure, and their fasted blood sugar, which will increase insulin sensitivity and their carb tolerance. So I'm seeing both subjectively that they're feeling better. They feel more energy, that they love the foods that they're taking in, but also I'm seeing objectively through their health markers, hey, their blood sugar is going down. They have more blood, better blood sugar management postprandially. We're seeing this through using a glucometer. And then also a big thing with women is I'm trying to improve their hormones. So usually, honestly, the number one thing that I see with women is issues with thyroid hormone. And by increasing food and having them in this primer phase, we're giving more of that signal and allowing more of the conversion of T4 to metabolically active T3. And that's from two reasons. It's from having more energy availability so that the body doesn't have to downregulate thyroid production to save energy and lower energy expenditure and thus lower your resting metabolic rate. But it's also because they have more necessary nutrients and cofactors that are vital for the enzymatic process of converting T4 to metabolically active T3. I can't tell you how many times I have women come to me and we run a thyroid panel and they've been chronically dieting and all of their, you know, most of their T3 is reverse T3. So it's caught up in cachet. It's the T3 that latches onto the thyroid receptor and blocks T3 from actually exerting its metabolic actions. And this is necessary for so many processes in the body, not only from a metabolic rate perspective, but also from an energy perspective. And then with those increase in calories and that improvement in hormones, I see greater consistency in their menstrual cycle, which indicates an improvement in their sex hormone health. So those are all the physiological benefits that I'm going after. And when I'm able to explain that to a female, I say, listen, we're going over every, you know, I'm not missing any rocks on here. And then I compound that with, let's look at the psychological improvements that we're going to make as well, because we can't forget, like I said, you cannot dissociate physiology from psychology. It's not just about the internal improvements that I can make to your body and your body composition, but it's also about, you know, essentially, you know, the first thing I'm looking at is improving, you know, their relationship with food and their outlook on nutrition, which I find to help with adherence and getting them away from that black and white mentality around food and being scared of eating more carbs or eating more calories in general. And another thing that I really look to do is I'm trying to focus on improving any maladaptive behaviors here. You know, if you look in the literature, and this is not me trying to really center in on this, but if you look at the literature, you will see a higher predisposition for females to have, you know, previous histories of disordered eating relationships, emotional eating, and engaging in stress eating. As food is often used as a coping mechanism and drug by many. And really, when we think about that, sometimes, you know, women are embarrassed to admit this stuff. You know, when I have a female client come to me and there's some shame in it, and so they're not open about it. But when they do come to me, I explain to them, listen, this is not only, you know, a bad relationship with food, but this is cultural and societal. We have to realize, let's think about any movie that you watch, Ruby. If you were to look at any of the stereotypical, you know, romance, docudramas or whatever, we always see that women in these films, when they have a breakup, what do? They get all their girls together and they sit on the couch, they eat ice cream and binge watch movies. It's ingrained in our culture. When a woman has a menstrual cycle, you know, her mother, especially initially, you know, in the States, you know, her mother will tell her, listen, have some chocolate or have something sweet. And then, you know, it's funny. It really is cultural because a lot of times women will think that that craving for chocolate is a physiological need. If we actually look in the research, you go to a place like Spain, you go to Europe, they actually crave savory items, not sweet items, because that was their cultural rate, how they were raised culturally. So we have to realize that, you know, the relationship with food is so crucial, especially for a consistency aspect. And if people are using food as a drug and as a coping mechanism, that's going to hold them back because stress, you know, stress is going to always be a part of our lives. So we have to find different, you know, different ways of coping with that. And so when it comes to, you know, fixing these maladaptive behaviors around food, I do this by focusing more on the behavioral aspect of a client's nutrition and how they approach eating both from a physical and mental aspect. And I usually see that when I improve their relationship with food, not only does it lead to much less disordered eating behaviors, but I also realize that they're able to maintain that going forward. So when I make changes, they're less likely to be combative. You know, in the initial phase, when you increase a female's carbs by 50 grams, she wants to like cut your head off. But once she realizes, hey, listen, this is just fuel. Like this is something that my body eats. It's going to make me feel better, perform better, look better. she gets a better relationship with food, and there isn't like this need for restriction or fear. Another thing, and this is something that you really been big on lately, is improving stress management skills. And this is pivotal. I really have to. I did a two-part series on stress. I did one on the physiology of stress as well as stress management. So if you guys want to check that out, you know, Every Calorie Counts podcast, please listen to that. It's about 3 hours worth of stress physiology. But stress is pivotal because, you know, we have to realize stress is stress. Stress is cumulative and can often become the biggest roadblock in one's ability to succeed, especially once we transition into, you know, a fat loss phase, as improper stress management skills will lead to a situation where the negative effects of stress can manifest. So we see increased likelihood of cravings. We see a higher likelihood of disinhibition. So your ability to stay on the plan is going to go out the window. So we've all had those stressful moments where we've went to food as a coping mechanism for that stress. We see higher cortisol levels during stressful periods. We see lowered sleep quality. We see higher rates of insulin resistance, and that's going to impair nutrient partitioning and metabolic flexibility. So now, you know, people ask me all the time, can you get fat off stress? Directly, is stress going to deposit adipose tissue? No, but it's going to make you insulin resistant. So then when you do take in carbs, you're going to be more likely to partition those into fat cells that are receptive to that. Then you are going to be to partition that to muscle or liver glycogen storage. So yeah, indirectly, stress can make you fat. We also see stress and cortisol, they're catabolic hormones. So this causes a loss of muscle mass. And thus, you know, also you're skewing your body composition. So you're becoming, you know, a smaller, fatter version of yourself. And we see decreased training performance as well. So these are all things we have to take into consideration. And the last thing I want to hit on is, this is big for me, and I speak with clients and females about this all too often, and it's improving their relationship with the scale and with their body weight. This is huge. What I often find is that my female clients have a poor relationship with the scale prior to coming back to me. And essentially they've been living or dying by the scale. I mean, I can tell you, I had a few clients that have come to me that hadn't been on a scale in 3 to 4 years. They had done Weight Watchers. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with that over there, Ruby, but they do a weekly weigh-in, and that's part of it. And because they had such a misguided viewpoint on the scale and such bad experiences having with these fluctuations, that it almost like scarred them. They had like PTSD. So this got them into this mindset where they lived and died by the scale. If they, their Sunday weigh-in went well, they had a great week. If not, you know, if it was up and they didn't realize like so many factors that could impact this, the rest of the week they were off plan, and then it compounded. It's like a domino effect. So they had one bad weigh-in and they didn't realize that it could be gut content or increased glycogen storage, or it could just be water retention, or it could be from their cycle. And so they thought that they were a failure. And so they got into this mindset where, well, it doesn't matter. I tried hard all week. I was on my diet and I still gained weight. You have to realize that it's not just about scale weight. So we have to, you know, I always try to get across my female clients, especially, your scale won't always trend down. And this can really impact their mentality and their approaches. My approach to this is desensitizing them to the scale. So I do this through daily weigh-ins. And I explain to them all the factors that can impact their weight, especially their cycle, because I'm so surprised when I speak to women and they don't realize the natural fluctuations that come with the cycle. And I noticed that a lot of coaches don't explain this as well. So when I get women to realize that it's so normal to see weight fluctuations, especially over the course of the cycle, you know, they're able to view the scale differently. They detach themselves from that number and they really focus on their body composition. And just, you know, just to go over this, any female listeners that aren't aware, you should see fluctuations in your daily and weekly cycle. Like for instance, your weight will usually be the lowest about 2 to 3 days after menstruation. So in week one, you should see like your lowest scale weights. And then it'll go up in week two, you know, scale weight will naturally fluctuate up because you're having higher estrogen levels. So you're getting some water retention. Estrogen also causes some sodium retention. So you're seeing that you're going to have some aldosterone. You're going to have increase in estrogen. That's going to help you with training, with nutrient partitioning. There's so many benefits. So don't forget, ladies, the benefits I touched on estrogen. However, you're going to hold more water, and it's just water. It's not fat. It's not adipose tissue. You're actually partitioning nutrients better. So it's not like you're storing more of those nutrients, you're just having some sodium and water retention. So you're going to see your weight go up in week two before ovulation. And then in week three, I'll generally see your weight starting to trend down. And then we all know the last week, you know, the late luteal phase is the hell week where women don't want to step on the scale. But I always try to get women across like your weight's going to be highest during, you know, PMS, because you're going to have that increase in water retention. Plus you're going to have so much stress, especially if you're someone that does suffer from, you know, a difficult, PMS period, that you're going to be stressing yourself to increase water retention just through the interaction that cortisol plays on the aldosterone receptor. So you have to realize we take that into consideration. And I always say that an informed client is a more adherent client because they're more educated and they understand the process. So the first part is about understanding, and then we're able to apply things better. So when a client realizes the weight isn't everything, the scale weight, it's just one metric and it's not the end all be all, then we're able to understand more of this whole like up and down pattern of weight fluctuation and realize that we have to look at other metrics to track progress, which is really hard for females to get across. But I find that when I put them in a primer phase and I have them at maintenance calories and I'm telling them, listen, we're building up your food intake, but you're currently at maintenance. So in week one, you had a little bit of a dip, but week two and week three, your weight was stabilized. If you go up in week four, I'm telling you in advance, you should go up in week four. You should have water retention. Then it's like they expect it and they realize, listen, this is a part of the process. And then the next week, right after menstruation, their weight goes back down. It's consistent. And they're able to see those trends and patterns. They're also able to see the daily fluctuations and they're able to accept it and, you know, remove that, you know, traumatic relationship with the scale, which is all too common.
It really is. And it's also why with my own clients, I try to get them to ditch the scales, because the emotional attachment to the scale and seeing these fluctuations, it like the psychology can change and shape how your body works and responds physiologically. So it's really important to not actually have such a strong emotional connection to the scale. And some women can't let go of that, regardless of whether they know it's going to fluctuate. And it's detrimental. And this is also why it's so important to stop using coaches for just weight loss. And the long approach on paper is actually the fastest way to lose weight, because you're not going to have all this relapse and yo-yo dieting. And it's way too common with them. But I did want to touch on a couple of things you said, because it was so important. The nutrient deficiencies are one of the most prominent things I see. Like, there are clients that, well, a lot of women that, one, do not get in enough protein, and two, they don't even know what a vegetable is, pretty much. So knowing that when you actually fill up your diet with a lot more protein and a lot more veggies, you actually nourish your gut health, your digestion, your metabolism, and your thyroid. But there was something you said that I do kind of want you to elaborate a little bit more on, and that's why muscle mass is so important here, the high energy flux state, and why actually having a proper strength program, not using coaches just for weight loss, and actually progressing in that to build the muscle mass leads to not only a much more successive fat loss phase, but you're building a better, like, it's not just about fat loss. You want a better body in the long run. And that comes with building muscle, because otherwise, like we both touched on, you are going to be a smaller version of yourself, and it's going to be eventually a lot more fat mass. And then in the long run, even though you're still smaller, when you do gain weight, it's going to be a lot more fat mass, because you touch on this a lot too, which is part of what I want you to talk about, is you are, yes, more anabolic after a diet, but that does not mean you are more primed to put on more muscle mass. It also means you're more primed, even more primed, to put on more fat mass, because in your dieting state, your enzymes and your body's systems that upregulate fat storage increase. So maybe you can tie into that how you approach the reverse or the maintenance after this diet, and why it's so important with that whole high energy flux muscle state, muscle mass thing.
So I'm going to give your audience a teaser, because we got to get off in a couple of minutes. And that is a, let's do that as a full topic, but I'm going to give a little teaser to you ladies, so you understand some of the complexities behind this. And then we can dive more into the nuances. So really what I'm trying to do with this high energy flux state, I'm trying to get as much metabolic efficiency as possible. So I'm looking at this from multiple components. I'm trying to increase your body's ability to expend calories. And so I'm doing that through increasing your food intake, which is going to increase your resting metabolic rate. It's going to help with the thermic effect of feeding. I'm also going to make sure that we're prioritizing protein, which has the highest thermic effect of feeding. So just for those that aren't aware of thermic effect of feeding, it's essentially the energy, the caloric cost of the food digestion that you put into your body. So really when we look at research, we see that protein has a thermic effect between 20 and 30%. So if a female took down 100 calories worth of protein, she's going to absorb about 70 calories out of those. Whereas fats is about 0 to 3% of a thermic effect, and carbs is about 5 to 10%. So we see this very, you know, this big drastic difference between the two. So you're essentially getting more free calories. Essentially, you're able to satiate yourself, get, you know, stimulate that muscle protein synthesis, help with the building and remodeling process of lean body mass, which is going to increase your metabolic rate all the more, but you're also able to burn more calories literally just by sitting down and having a chicken breast. You know what I mean? So it's multiple benefits, but the high energy flux state that I speak about is I'm trying to get women into a position. And this is for my male clients as well. I want you to be able to move more and eat more. And that's the concept behind high energy flux. Essentially what it means is that you're able to maintain your body weight. So the state of energy balance at a much higher caloric intake. So we have two different situations. You could be in a state of low energy flux. And this is where I really find people commonly come to me. They have underate for a long period of time. They have suppressed their metabolism. They have low thyroid levels. They have a lowered resting metabolic rate. And with that, they're eating such little calories because they've had to constantly chip down on the amount of food that they can take in and actually maintain their weight. And so little by little, what they used to be able to lose weight on has become their maintenance calories. And all of a sudden, it's become a surplus. So they're in what's called a low energy flux state. They're eating very little and they're burning a lot less because their body has become more efficient at burning less calories. Think about it from a survival aspect. Your body is trying to become as efficient with calories as possible so that it burns less because it thinks you're in a state of famine. It thinks you're starving. So you're low on energy. You're not moving around as more. Your training quality has lowered. Your ability to do cardio is less. You're noticing that you're spending more of your evenings on the couch laid up and not able to go out with your kids or walk the dog. You're noticing all these downstream effects from low energy. But it's not only low energy physically, but it's also from low energy availability because food is energy. So with that, I try to switch females' approaches. I try to get them on as many calories as possible. And with that, their NEAT or their non-exercise activity thermogenesis increases. Their ability to train harder. So not only higher volumes, but they're also able to push heavier loads. They're getting stronger in the gym. That increases. And honestly, weight training is not a very effective form of burning calories. And a lot of people don't realize that. However, the more absolute load that you use is the highest caloric cost. So the stronger you get, ladies, the more calories you're going to burn per session. So that's why it's not about burning, you know, burning in the cuts or trying to do these metabolic circuits where you're doing 15, 20 reps. If you are to properly periodize your weight training and work within that 6 to 12 range and increase muscle mass and really push yourself to a high level of exertion, you're going to burn more calories in that session as well as for the rest of the day because you've increased muscle mass. And with that, I'm getting them into a state of what I call a state of abundance because most people come to me in a state of restriction. They've been under eating, under fueling, unable to train hard. They've been lackluster in life. So they feel like shit. They're unable to, you know, perform cognitively. They're really like downregulated both physically and mentally. Whereas I'm increasing their food intake. I'm getting their energy availability up. I'm increasing their micronutrient density. I'm getting better food quality in their system, having them have higher energy levels. They're training better. They're feeling better. They're more active. They're feeling better mentally, physically, emotionally, all these things. So they're more likely to get out and do things on the weekends or to go out and really live a life of abundance. And with that, we're improving body composition because you'll never hear me talk about weight loss. I'll talk about weight loss studies because that's really what they're looking at. You'll never hear me just explicitly look at weight loss. I'm looking at fat loss because what a lot of people do is they go onto these crash diets where they have an aim of losing a certain amount of quote unquote weight per week. But really what we want, honestly, with my female clients, I want them to lose as little scale weight as possible, but improve their body composition as much as possible. Because ladies, what you have to realize is that a pound of fat is much more energetically expensive to lose than is a pound of muscle. And think about that just from a nutrient perspective. You know, 1 gram of fat is 9 calories per gram, whereas 1 gram of protein, which you guys can think about as muscle, because that is what makes up myofibular tissue, is 4 calories per gram. So when we look at the energetic cost of what it takes to build muscle or lose muscle, as compared to what it takes to build fat or lose fat, it's much different. So if you lose 5 pounds and you're only worried about the scale weight and you crash diet and you go to a 50-50 split between muscle and fat, you'll lose more weight, losing more muscle, and you'll lose it quicker. So that's what you really have to get across. And then you're becoming a smaller and less attractive version of yourself in terms of your strength, in terms of your overall body composition, in terms of your performance, in terms of your energy. Remember, your muscle is your metabolic currency. It's what burns calories. It's the organ of longevity. It has so many other benefits that we can cover on a full podcast. But I really try to get across to people, fat is an inflammatory tissue. We want to lose fat body fat. Body fat essentially secretes inflammatory cytokines. It causes insulin resistance. It's got all these negative effects. But if we look at muscle mass, it's secreting pro-inflammatory cytokines. It's releasing myokines that interact with the brain. It's releasing BDNF. It's helping with muscle protein synthesis. It's helping with increasing metabolic rate. If we look at the energetic expense of gaining a kilogram of muscle as compared to gaining a kilogram of fat, for every kilogram of muscle you ladies gain, it's 14 calories per kilogram, whereas fat is 4.5. So you're getting pretty much a 3 times higher return on your investment by investing into muscle mass. So that's why it's so crucial that you guys weight train. It's not about weight loss. It is about body composition. It's about transforming your body. And often during this primer phase, what I'm really aiming for is body recomposition. I'm trying to increase your lean body mass, decrease your body fat. And I have so many ladies that look completely different. Their glutes are more lifted and sculptuous. They have more of that toned look. And I really want to get this across to females, and we can do a full podcast on this, but don't be scared of the concept of building muscle. I've never met a female, and I've worked with IFBB pros, that have gotten too muscular. You know what I mean? And it's not going to happen. So that's a misconception. But increasing your resistance training and getting away from just doing HIIT circuits and cardio and underfueling yourself is going to result in a better body composition both now and in the future. Because when you invest in your muscle and you invest into your body composition rather than weight loss, you have long-lasting effects in terms of your insulin sensitivity, in terms of your bone mineral density, which is a huge problem for women. You have long-lasting effects to your metabolic rate. You're essentially adding deposits into the bank every single day. Whereas if you only do cardio, or if you underfuel yourself, you're constantly year by year, decade by decade, you're lowering your actual metabolic rate, and you're going to be able to eat less and be more predisposed to fat gain. Because think about it, we're in an obesogenic environment. So we are so exposed to hyperpalatable foods and all these delicious things, and we all want to enjoy them. We just got through the holidays. You know how many clients of mine, messaged me and said, "I can't believe I was able to eat multiple free meals during the holiday. I didn't gain a pound." Yes, because we've built up your system to be resilient. And that's what I want for people. I don't want clients to be scared of food from a mental perspective or from a physical perspective. And the biggest thing with me is when I diet a female, once we go past this primer phase, we do get in a fat loss phase, reverse dieting with me is mandatory. It is mandatory with all of my, especially my female clients, because I won't diet a female if she refuses to sign up for a reverse dieting phase, because it's not about the results you get in 12 weeks. It's about what you can sustain and maintain overall, long lasting, because we know that 95% of diets fail, and it's not during the dieting phase itself. It's during the maintenance phase. So that's huge.
That's why maintenance is progress. And none of what Brandon said will ever happen if all you do is hop from quick fix to quick fix, diet to diet. You need to actually invest in your long term, because then you will be more resilient. You will be able to take on like this actual amount of random days without putting on that extra fat. But we definitely need to do another podcast on why muscle is so important and more about the way that you do your reverse. And I guess we have to sum it up there, but there is so much gold for you all to take there. And like, if there's anything you take away from this, I'm going to let Brandon sum it up as well, but your metabolism is a mirror of your behaviors, the current and your past behaviors. And this is why a primer phase is so important, especially for females, because not only is our physiology so much more volatile, but we come into the whole process with a history of psychological considerations, with a lot of negative perceptions around not only the scale, but food and dieting itself. So with that, I'll let you sum it up. And if there's anywhere where my followers can find you, and maybe you can also talk to my American followers about the thing you have coming up in Texas soon.
Absolutely. Well, Ruby, that was a beautiful summary, man. I feel like you've put me on the spot, and I don't know if I can hold the torch to that. But overall, ladies, the intention of this podcast, Ruby and I got together about this because we really want to get across both evidence-informed, but also applicable information for you guys, and realize that the easy route is not always the most beneficial route. So like she said, it's not about taking a short-term approach. There are so many short-term shortcuts and these quick fixes that are sold within this industry. However, this puts you on essentially a merry-go-round of, getting some results and then recidivism. and then getting some results and going yo-yo diet to yo-yo diet. And here's the thing, really with my clients, my biggest thing when looking at working with someone is I don't want to just make a body transformation. I want to make a life transformation. And the life transformation to me is long-term sustainable results. It's not just about what you can do in 8 to 12 weeks. It's about what we can do together in 12 months or multiple years and what you can learn in the process. And that's why we cannot disregard both your physiology as a female, especially a genetically unique female, as well as your psychology. And it's stuff that really needs to be paid attention to. And I'm glad that it's becoming, we're getting more spotlight on that. But really, ladies, if you see these different dieting patterns and it all sounds too good to be true, and it sounds very similar to what you've done in the past, realize if what you've been doing is not working, you need to try a different approach. It's like Einstein used to say, you know, essentially, if, you know, it's crazy to continue doing the same things if you're getting the same results. So if you want to change not only your metabolism, but your body composition and your life, this is really what I want to get across to females. I encounter so many women that have not only not gotten the body composition and physique results that they wanted with their body. So it's hurt their confidence. It's hurt their mindset, their body image, but it's also diminished their quality of life. And ladies, I want you to realize that if you invest into yourself, into your body composition, into your training and into your nutrition, you're not only going to improve the way you look, but the way you feel and every other aspect of your life. And it's going to have, like I said, this is going to be a life transformation. So I'm looking forward to coming back on and we'll cover muscle in detail because there are a lot of myths, especially around female muscle building that I would love to go through because ladies, I touched on the nutritional differences in physiology, but there are a lot of training differences in physiology that a lot of people don't realize nor touch on. So even, programming from a training perspective for women building muscle, it's not completely different from males, but there are some specific programming nuances that we could look at to really optimize the program for you and not just to follow, you know, what's on bodybuilding.com or Testosterone Nation or whatever you saw your boyfriend doing. So that's a big thing. And then guys, if anyone's in the States, I will be a part of what's called the Physique Enhancement Seminar. And that is a collection of both IFBB pros as well as other coaches. We have IFBB pro Jason Theobald. We have Olympia competitor, John Jewett. We have Lauren Conlin, who is huge with women. She's an IFBB pro as well. We have a multitude of coaches and we're going to be presenting on all different topics. My topic in particular is how to initiate a high energy flux lifestyle for sustainable fat loss maintenance. I will be going into the ins and outs. I will be looking over client case studies where I've been able to build, you know, clients' intakes by thousands of calories and still keep them at a very lean, sustainable, and healthy body composition. We're going to be looking at all the research. So it's a really exciting topic, but we're covering everything from metabolic adaptation to cycle syncing, a lot of female topics, because honestly, this group in particular, we've really seen that women have been overlooked in this industry quite frequently. And so I'm glad to be able to cover some podcasts. You know, I go and I do podcasts based on what the topic is asked of me. And often, you know, I try to do general topics so that it benefits both sexes, but I'm really glad that I was able to touch on this topic. And if you guys have any questions, inquiries, please feel free to reach out to me on Instagram is the best place. And it's at @BrandonDeCruz_. Thanks again, Ruby.
Thank you for coming on. And I can't wait to get you back on to go into more things about women.